Well, before we turn, well, it's worth turning to it now. We're looking at Psalm 131 tonight. Psalm 131. If you're using a church Bible, you can find that on page 658, 658. But before we read that psalm, I want to tell you about three people. These are three fictional people, so I've made up the names and I've made up the situation. So if you know someone of this name in this situation, I wasn't thinking of them. Firstly, let me tell you about a lady called Becky. Becky was married to John. Both Becky and John were brought up in Christian families. They met in their teenage years and got married in their early 20s. John was a professing Christian, but was never very keen. It always seemed that he was more interested in TV, music, films, than he was in the things of God. After 5 years of marriage, and with a baby on the way, John announced that he wasn't, in fact, a Christian, and that he was leaving Becky. And so Becky was left on her own with a young child. The church rallied round, but it was a painful time. And as time went on for Becky, she became angrier and angrier. Angry at John, angry at John's family, but most of all, angry with God. Why, she said, how could a God who loved me possibly put me through this? So that's our first person. Second person, called Alex. Alex is a young man in constant pain. He's got a chronic illness. Some days are better than others. Some weeks are better than others, but he's never free from it. It's always there. And in many ways, Alex feels that this pain is ruining his life. Other men his age are fit and healthy and active. They're still enjoying strength and health. But Alex can't do what they can do. And it leaves a bitter taste in his mouth. And he finds himself being very resentful. Resentful of the other guys, you know, when he sees their posts on Facebook of the things they're getting up to. He's angry. Most of all, he's resentful towards God. If God really loved me, he thinks to himself, why wouldn't he take this illness away? Finally, let me tell you about Janet. Janet's lonely. All Janet longs for is a husband. She's seen friends get married. She's been happy for them. She's held their kids in her arms. But the one thing she's always longed for is what she hasn't received. She's longed for a family of her own. Sometimes she'll lie in bed at night and she'll just imagine how happy she could have been if God had given her what she wanted. Now, as I say, all three of those names and situations are completely made up. But the reality is that those situations are very real to churches up and down the land, aren't they? They're situations that we probably know people who have been in those, and maybe even tonight we're in a situation like that or similar ourselves. And those emotions of anger and resentment and longing are emotions we have and still feel. So I wonder tonight if you had a piece of paper in front of you and if I asked you just to write down one word that those three people needed, I wonder what that one word would be. Health, love, family? Well, no. Because I think here in Psalm 131 the one word that David, the psalmist, would say they need is contentment. There was an old Puritan writer, and he wrote a book called The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. And contentment is a jewel, isn't it? It's precious. To be content in whatever circumstances I find myself, however hard they may be, that is precious. And it's rare. After all, we all have a sense, don't we, of entitlement. I deserve this. I deserve that. And if things don't work out the way I planned, then actually I feel it's not fair, and I feel that God's not treating me fairly. TV and film have taught us that we can and should expect life to work out with a fairy tale ending. And where does this sense of unfairness lead? Well, ultimately it leads us to be discontent. To be unhappy, not only in our situation, but unhappy with God. So this evening, whatever situation we're in, what I want us to learn about is contentment. And we're going to do that, as I say, by looking at Psalm 131. It's been described as one of the shortest psalms to read, but one of the longest psalms to learn. So let's just read Psalm 131, a song of ascent of David. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord, from this time forth and forevermore. So we've got three headings tonight as we think about contentment. And our first heading is an attitude to leave behind. An attitude to leave behind. Now, what is David saying in verse 1? When he says that he doesn't concern himself with things too great for him, what does he mean? Is he saying that Christians shouldn't be particle physicists or prime ministers or get involved in anything too difficult? Well, no, that's not what David's saying. Those aren't the great matters that David's talking about. So what is David saying then? Well, let's think about those three people we mentioned at the beginning. As their head hits the pillow at night and they think about their situation, what do they start doing? Well, they start trying to piece it all together, don't they? This week I was away with my wife for a few days. We went to a little cottage in Kent. And I don't know about you, but the first thing we like to do when we get to a cottage is to look for the puzzle. Every holiday cottage, it seems, has a puzzle somewhere. We found a puzzle. We did a puzzle. It was great. If you like puzzles, it was great. Obviously, if you don't like puzzles, then that's a really boring holiday for you. But we enjoy doing a little puzzle. What do you do when you get a puzzle? You've got all these bits that doesn't make sense. And so you're looking, you're trying to find the right bits. You're trying to put everything into place to try and kind of build a picture that makes sense. Well, that's what we can do, isn't it? We can start trying to put together our lives and our circumstances and our situations like a big puzzle, a giant jigsaw puzzle that doesn't make any sense. So we try and put things into their right place and try and make sense of what is God doing. And maybe part of that is that sense that he shouldn't be doing this or he shouldn't be doing that. And actually, as I build my puzzle, the pieces go in where I want them to go. And we say, I've got a better plan. If God did this for me, if God gave me this, or if God gave me that, if God released me from my difficult situation, then Well, then I'd be happy. Then my puzzle would make the picture that I want it to make. We can try and make sense of it all, but not in a humble, submissive way. We can try and make sense of it all when we're operating under the wrong assumption deep down that we know better than God. That's what David's describing. And of course, I think this is something that we're probably all familiar with, aren't we? Which one of us can honestly say that we haven't thought at times that we know best? That if only God gave me what I wanted, then things would be better. If only God danced to my tune and followed my script, then everything would work out as I wanted it to, and I would be happy. But what David wants us to understand is that at the heart of that attitude is pride. Look what he says, verse 1. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. If you're using an NIV, it'll say, my heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty or arrogant. Because that's what David means. He's speaking about pride. When he speaks about eyes being lifted up, that's a way that they would describe pride. That's at the heart of that attitude of trying to piece it all together, trying to work out why God isn't doing this and God should be doing that and giving me what I want. It's pride. And it has to be pride, doesn't it? For you or I to possibly think that we know better than the living God what is best for us, it can only be pride. And where does all this lead? Well, look at verse 2 in the first line. But I have calmed and quieted myself. That means, of course, that when David wasn't content, when he was lifting up his eyes in pride, trying to work out all that God was doing, that actually he wasn't calm and content. He wasn't calm and quiet. There were tears and tantrums and a sense of frustration and anger and resentment over the unfairness of it all. And maybe even for David, there was self-pity and grumpiness and sulking. And so David says, here's an attitude to leave behind. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be so proud and arrogant to think that I know best. So do you see, David finds contentment when he learns to place his problems in the hands of the Lord rather than trying to work them out himself. Well, before we come to our second heading, Christian friend, let me ask you this evening. Are you grumpy? Are you sulking? Are you filled with frustration over the unfairness of it all? Maybe you lie awake at night trying to work it all out, dreaming of the life you could have had and wondering to yourself, why is God doing all this? He shouldn't be doing this. He shouldn't be doing that. In fact, I've got a better plan. And if God were working towards my plan, then everything would be okay. Christian friend, is that you? Well, if it is, then actually tonight your greatest need isn't your problem or your situation to be solved and to turn out the way you want it to. Your greatest need is contentment. So there's an attitude to leave behind. Let's come to our second heading. an attitude to be cultivated. I think the first thing to say under this heading is that contentment isn't natural. Earlier on in the service, we read from Philippians chapter 4, didn't we? Do you remember what Paul said there? I have learned to be content. Paul had to learn to be content because contentment isn't natural. As I've already said, we're born with a sense of entitlement, aren't we? A sense that we should have the life we've always dreamed of. But David says, and Paul says, we have to learn to be content. And this is David's experience. Look at verse 2. He says, but I have calmed and quieted my heart. This is something that David had to do. It wasn't something that just happened naturally. He had to actively calm and quiet his heart. When I was younger, we used to go every Saturday night swimming at the Latchmere Leisure Centre. I don't know if you've ever been to the Latchmere. I haven't been in about 25 years, but it's fantastic from memory. And there's a big wave machine, and there's a siren, and the siren sounds, and suddenly all these big waves start rolling in, and it's great fun. And as the waves come in, you go up and you go down. In many ways, that's what David was like emotionally and spiritually before, isn't it? He was up and down, angry and moody, like waves in a swimming pool. But here he says, I've quieted my heart. That word quieted, it actually has the sense of making something flat. So rather than waves, now he's calm. Think of a calm lake or a calm swimming pool. That's what David says he's done. And how has he done that? He's done that by not lifting up his eyes, by not being proud and arrogant, thinking he knows best, but being able to place his situation in the hands of the Lord. I have calmed and quieted myself. In fact, David says, that he's become like a weaned child. So look at verse 2. Like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. Now, what does David mean? Well, weaning a child, that's when you move a child from milk onto solid food. Weaning a child is difficult, isn't it? Especially for Jewish children, when David was writing this. At that time, most children would be weaned fully at about the age of 3 or 4. So maybe the equivalent in our day and age, as close as we can get to it at least, is to think of a three-year-old or so losing their dummy. When I've got a four-year-old daughter, she's not three anymore. A four-year-old daughter, but when she was three, we had to take her dummy away. And she was very, very attached to her dummy. And she was really, really unhappy when we did that. There were tears and there were tantrums and there was screaming. I want my dummy. So you can imagine, can't you? If you just imagine what it's like for a three-year-old to lose their dummy, imagine what it would be like for a 3 or 4 year old to be weaned. All their lives, all they've ever known is to sit on mum's lap and be fed. Mum's lap is comfortable. It's safe. It's warm. And yet, however warm and safe and comforting mum's milk might be, if that child's going to grow up, they need to eat solid food. If they stay on mum's lap forever, they won't grow bigger and stronger. They need proper food. In fact, the Hebrew word for weaned means to grow up. And just think of this, that when that child is weaned, when they've moved from milk to solid food, well then, they're content, aren't they? Even though now they've lost mum's milk, They're happy. Why? Well, because now they have something better. They have solid food. So do you see what David's saying? Sometimes, Christian friends, it feels like everything's gone wrong. Maybe your marriage hasn't worked out the way you thought it would. Maybe your kids haven't turned out the way you hoped they would. Maybe your life simply hasn't ended up the way you wanted it. Maybe your life feels like a burgled house where it feels like God's just come in and he's turned all your plans and all your hopes and all your dreams upside down. But why? Why has God taken away mum's milk? Why has God taken away all of those things that were comfortable and safe? Well, he's done that in order that you will grow. In order that, like a child being weaned, you'll receive something better than what you lost. And actually, it's only when a child learns to trust mum, to stop throwing tantrums, to realise that mum knows best, it's only when a child learns to do that, that actually they see the joy of solid food, isn't it? It's only when they learn to trust their mum and accept the solid food she's given them, that actually then they know true contentment and true happiness, because they've got that something better. Of course, that doesn't mean it's not painful. Weaning is a painful experience for the mum and the child. And the reality is for us, Christian friends, that sometimes God takes away from us those things that are warm and comfortable and safe. And it's painful. Because there are some lessons that we can only learn as Christians when it hurts. One writer says this: we need to learn the lesson of this psalm, to recognize our own limitations, to grasp like a weaned child from his mother's breast that even without what we thought we needed, we are still loved and cared for. So, Christian friend, do you see what David's saying? He's like a weaned child. What he thought he needed has been removed. But because of that, he now has what he really needs. And he now knows true contentment. And Christian friend, how about you? Do you feel like God's taken away mum's milk? Everything that seems safe and warm and comfortable has been stripped away. Does God still love you? Does he really know what's best? Well, Christian friend, contentment is realizing that God always has my best intentions at heart, whatever the situation I find myself in, and that yes, he may have taken away the milk, but he's done that in order that I can grow. And he's done that in order that I can find true contentment and true happiness in something better. So let's come to our third and our final heading. Where can I find the rare jewel of Christian contentment? What is the something better that God wants to bring us to? Well, David answers that question. Look at verse 3. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. David is now applying his own experience, what he's been describing in verses 1 to 2. He's now applying that experience to us, to God's people, Israel. He says, this is how you can know contentment. This is how you can know peace. Hope in the Lord. So imagine for a moment there's a harbour and there's lots of boats. But a storm hits the harbour. And the next day is a scene of devastation and chaos. Boats have been thrown onto the land. There's boats upside down, boats on cars, boats in houses. There's boats everywhere. And some boats have been stripped out to sea and they've been taken away and they're lost for good. But in the middle of this harbour, there was one boat that's still there and still okay. But why? Why did this boat survive where all the other boats were wrecked? Well, because this boat was anchored to the seabed, not to the jetty. And so, when all those big waves and the wind and all of the storm came rolling in, this boat was safe. Why? Because it was anchored to something solid. Now, I think that's a good picture of what David is teaching us here. Life is full of surprises. Sometimes wonderful surprises, but sadly, sometimes terrible, devastating surprises. And whether it's that devastating diagnosis from the doctor, or a sudden death in the family, or sudden unemployment and possibly even poverty, what we need, David says, to be content in that situation is to be anchored to the one thing that will not move. When everything else is falling apart, I need to be rooted to the one thing that cannot be moved or destroyed. I need to have my hope in the Lord. In fact, the word that David uses for hope is a word that describes looking or waiting for something. So imagine, tomorrow morning you're going to work, but it's bank holiday Monday, so no work tomorrow, but imagine Tuesday, you're going to work, and you've got to get a bus. I don't know if you get a bus, but you've got to get a bus, and you rush down to the Camberwell Green, and you're waiting for maybe the 45 or something like that, and you're already running late, and so you're standing at the bus stop, and what are you doing? Where are your eyes? Well, they're looking up the hill, aren't they? They're looking for the 45, because in that bus are all your hopes of getting to work on time. That's where your hopes are. That's where your desire is. So you're looking and you're waiting for that bus. Well, that's the kind of word that David uses here for looking to God, hoping in Him. Looking to Him as the one on whom our hopes depend. So David's saying, rather than hoping for a change in circumstances, true contentment is found in hoping in the Lord. He is the source of true joy and true Christian contentment. It's why some Christians who have been plunged into the most painful of circumstances have still been able to rejoice in God. And that doesn't take away from their pain. The Bible doesn't give us a false idea of contentment, that somehow we'll be relieved of the pain. Situations are painful because we live in a world ruined by sin. But we can know contentment and even joy if we're hoping in the Lord. That's what David's learnt. He's learnt to stop trusting in mum's milk, to stop looking to all the safety nets that this world provides to try and find happiness. And he's learnt simply to look to the Lord. Hope in the Lord. It's in Him, in our relationship with Him, in our future with Him, in our salvation in Him, where true joy and true contentment is found. That's what Becky, Alex and Janet needed, isn't it? And Christian friend, maybe that's what you need tonight. I don't know many of you very well at all. I don't know what situations you find yourself in. Maybe life for you at the minute is going really great. Well, if that's the case, give thanks to God and don't trust in the good things in life for true happiness. Trust in Him. But if tonight you are in one of those desperately difficult situations, then understand what David's saying. Maybe the Lord has taken away mum's milk, but He's only done that so that you can grow. And He's only done that because He loves you. And He's only done that so that you can find something better. We so often, as sinful people, find ourselves trusting in the wrong things. And so sometimes God takes those things away, doesn't He? Because we need to learn to trust in Him. We need to be anchored to the one thing that will not be moved. David wants you to know tonight that even in the most painful of circumstances, you can be content. But only when your contentment is in God. Let's pray.